Bags down, spikes on, welcome to the track. Hi, my name is Colin Waitzman, and I'm going to be your host for this episode of Track World News, presented by Track Barn. And today, we have a ton to talk about. We're breaking out all of the things that happened at the NCAA Championship. So if you don't want to miss it, we're talking about Florida's dominance, Joseph Fambule going absolutely crazy, RG3 joining the booth and what that means for the future of track and field, and why the women's Bowerman race is the tightest race we've ever seen, ever. Before we go any further, I want to give a huge shout out to the sponsor of today's video, Manscaped. As track athletes, we're going to be running tons of miles every week and can be really sweaty and gross after a hard day of practice, but those days are behind us. Manscaped just sent me their brand new performance package, which comes with the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, Crop Reviver Toner, Performance Boxer Briefs, and a travel bag to hold all your goodies. Look, I've tried a lot of razors in my day, but the Lawnmower 4.0 is just different. Its ceramic blade helps reduce grooming accidents, LED light allows you to shave anytime, anywhere, and since it's waterproof, you can even take it in the shower if you want. When shopping with Manscaped, use code TWN at checkout to get 20% off your entire order, plus free shipping worldwide. Show up to your next meet looking good. If you want to be the best, you gotta look the best. Link is in the description, and now back to the video. Don't miss that. Before you do, make sure you leave a like, subscribe, comment. It really helps us know that you're enjoying the show, and let's jump right into it. So, Florida has been absolutely crazy this past few years. So obviously they win the national championship for both the men and the women. On the women's side, they scored 74 points to win the national championship. Texas comes in second with 64. Kentucky comes in third with 50. And then Texas A&M and LSU tie for fourth place with 39 points. On the men's side, the men of Florida score 54 points. Texas comes in second again with 38 points. Tennessee comes in third with 34 points. And then Florida State University round out your top four, scoring 33 points. And so it's very interesting how both of these teams did it. They did their championship run in very different and unique ways. On the men's side, it was sprints everywhere. I don't think they scored a single point outside of the sprints. So they scored in the, you know, the 100, the 200, the 4x1, the 4x4, and the 400. And so that's how they won. They were sprints dominant. On the women's side, a lot more, you know, different types of scoring they had. They had, you know, the 400, long jump, triple jump, 400 hurdles, heptathlon, you know, they scored a wide variety of ways when it came to the women's side for how they ended up getting the championship. So it's just interesting seeing how both of these teams, while they won a national championship, their road to the national title was very, very different. And I think this also solidifies Coach Holloway as one of the best coaches we've ever seen when it comes to college track and field. I mean, this man has produced time and time again, not only at the collegiate level, but developing the athletes that go to the collegiate level to being stellar performers when it comes to the professional ranks. Obviously, Grant Holloway is a big time name when you're looking at sprinters right now. You know, you have Fambule on the jumping side. You know, there's the Jasmine Moores, Anna Hall, like Marquise Dendy, you know, from years past, Christian Taylor, Will Clay. Like, there's been all of these names that have came through the Florida sprinting program, the Florida just running program. I know he's also trained, you know, many of the greats. And so this definitely solidifying him as, you know, one of the go-to guys when it comes to college sprinting at the very least. The NCAA championship is the best track meet in the entire world. And this is why it is. So unlike any other meet that you have, there is more drama and there is more storylines and better competition. So people then would say, oh, what about the Olympics? What about the World Championships? You're right. Like, the World Championships and the Olympics have better talent performing. Like, they're all of those athletes, or a majority of those athletes, are professional runners, they're professional jumpers, they're professional throwers. It's what they do for a living. And so you're going to see better marks on average when you watch an Olympic event or a World Championship event. That's true. But that's about where things kind of end, because you don't get these storylines that build up over the course of a year. You don't get these this drama of who's going to be coming out with the most amount of points by the end of the meet. You don't get all of these things that are nuances and make a track meet even better, because that's what kind of sells it. Let's look at the women's side, for example. So in the women's 200 and 100, we had a storyline that has been building up this entire season, not only this indoor-outdoor season, but this indoor season as well, when it came to Abby Steiner versus Favor Ofili. You know, these two women have been going back at it, trading national records every single meet. There's been drama and tension, and they've been so close. Their PRs were so close. Their season bests were so close. The times, the championships they had won, everything was so close. And so that's what made this outdoor 200 meters even more exciting than it would have been. I mean, I was doing a watch party. Many of you all were joining, and thank you if you did. We were doing some co-commentating, had some celebrity guests as well. It was a great time. And when we were watching the women's 200, that was the event that had the most viewers by far. It wasn't even close. And so everyone wanted to tune in to see who was going to end up winning this, because it had that drama that everyone wanted to see. Who's going to end up getting this lean? Because if it was just the one-time race, it's just these athletes competed for the first time at the championship games or at the world championships or at nationals, there's just not that amount of tension. Because we don't see that in the pros. Many of the best professional athletes do not compete against each other. But otherwise, it doesn't happen very often where you're going to be seeing these champions going head to head throughout the year. You see that in college track, and that's why I kind of like it better. You also have the team aspect of things. Who's going to score the most amount of points? Because now athletes are doing things to better the team, not just better themselves. An excellent example is Anna Hall. So Anna Hall, if she wanted to, she could have broken the national record for the heptathlon easy. It wouldn't have even been remotely close. She had an easy opportunity where she could have just done that event, run a 2:11, which she is more than capable of doing, get a national record, and then keep moving. But she didn't do that. She wanted to score the most amount of points to help her team win a national title. So what she did was she competed in the 400 meter hurdles 20 minutes before she had to run the 800, which was the final event of the heptathlon. She was in the middle of competing all of these events and threw in another thing, came in second place, knowing going into that race that it is going to mean almost certainly that she will not break the national record for the heptathlon. And so she sacrificed personal gain in order to have team glory. And that is something that I really care about and made it really, really exciting for me. It's also cool as you see the points add up and you see, oh, this team's ahead of this team, this team's ahead of that team. And then when it gets to those final races, they mean even more. We saw on the men's side, you know, the 5K, Florida State knew if they could go 1-2, they have a chance of winning this thing. So they went all out. They went after it. It didn't end up working, but you saw them go after it. On the women's side, you're seeing Florida, they had the 800 meter runner. All she had to do was score 1 point. She goes in there, tries to take the lead to guarantee that team has clinched the title. And so it's like these races mean a little bit more than if it's just an individual or just a pro athlete. And so that's why the NCAA championship is a better meet than any other meet that's out there. Sure, you could see better times elsewhere. You can go watch a professional meet and see faster times. But I would rather see races that have this extra meeting and better storylines. So that's why the NCAA championship is the best meet out there. I mean, you also have RG3 joining today. So this past weekend, RG3 joins the booth you know, if you don't know who that is, he's a football player. He went to Baylor. He won the Rookie of the Year when he played for the Washington, what was then known as the Washington Redskins. He won the Rookie of the Year. He had some knee injuries, so he was really never competed at the top level when it came to a football aspect, but he is from the NFL, but he is now an announcer. He was also a 400-meter hurdler and 100-meter hurdler when he was at Baylor. He came in third at Nationals, and he qualified for the Olympic trials when he was a freshman in college. And so he joined the booth, and he brought some much needed excitement when it came to this thing. He was really funny. I mean, he was talking about, he called Matthew Bowling, the Eminem of track and field, or saying this runner, she needs to be laid back like her edges, like just having these funny things that we don't get from other athletes. Like, he brought that humor that you'll see much more often in an NFL broadcast. He brought that to the national championship broadcast. And so I'm hoping that the ESPN users keep him at every major championship they could have. He should be announcing SECs, he should be announcing national championships, and hopefully they can get more track meets on ESPN so that he can do it. For those asking if he could do the Olympics or the World Championships or USAs, those are broadcasted on NBC, and I believe he is an ESPN exclusive commentator, so he wouldn't be able to commentate at those meets, but he'd be more than happy to do more ESPN ones. So I'm hoping that, you know, kind of gets that thing going there. Maybe we could see him on some American Track League events, you know, you never know. But so amazing production. I really enjoyed it overall, and glad to see RG3 coming out and Lycan to be a part of the conversation. Now let's go back to the Florida teams, that how they got here. So the big story of the day is obviously going to be Joseph Fambule. So Fambule, he goes in and he doubles. So he wins the 100 and he wins the 200. And then he also was the anchor on that 4x1 team that came in second. And he had three really amazing races. He put it all together when it mattered the most. And so what he was doing in the 100, he got a little bit of a better start than he normally does. You know, everyone kind of criticizes him saying, oh, you have a bad start, blah, 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 blah. But if you look at the race here, his start in the 100 wasn't that bad. And it was a really, really close race. I mean, one thing that was really funny after the race, in an interview, he says, hey, if it's even, I'm leaving. And so you have to be so far ahead of Joseph Fambule because you know his closeout speed is going to be massive. And so, like he said in his quote, if it's even, I'm leaving. And that's what he did. He got out and he was just a little bit behind the group. And then he ends up pulling away at the last second to get the win, where he ran a time of 10.00, a new personal best. And so another storyline out of that 100 was Michael Williams. So obviously going into this race, Michael Williams was the best, or Makai Williams. He was the number one seed coming into the championship. He had ran a 9.86 and a windy 9.83. And so he was the person that, you know, in my book, I had him as a national champion. In pretty much everyone else's books, had him as a national champion. And he doesn't show up and perform as he would like to. He ends up running he comes in seventh place and gets beat by, you know, a good amount of people there. And he really never had that separation that he normally does. I mean, his start is usually really good. And when we saw that he didn't have a lead on the team, he was actually kind of right in the middle. It looked like he was in second or third place like this entire time. Through that first 50 meters or so, I was like, man, this doesn't look good, because Fambule's close is so stellar and you're just even with him. I don't see a way that, you know, a guy that has a really good start didn't get the best start and then beating a guy whose closeout speed is top tier. So he ended up coming in second place. Feel bad for him. I think it was a mental thing. You know, when you're competing at these types of high levels and you now have that pressure on you, you know, that can build. I mean, he's went from being a guy last year making the Olympic team, you know, being that fourth leg, not many people knowing who you are outside of the NCAA championship, to being now, you're the second fastest guy in the world, and you have expectations that come with that. And so I think that pressure, you know, built up for him, you know, which is fine. I mean, it happens to me. It happens to everyone. You know, sometimes the pressure becomes a lot when you go from, you know, not having, you go from being the underdog to being the favorite. I mean, I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan. We went from being, you know, the underdogs winning the Super Bowl to next year being the favorites and not performing how we wanted to. So, you know, that happens. You know, you can go into a race being the favorite, being at home, and then, you know, your heart's beating a million miles a minute and things just don't you just don't execute the way that you want. Feel bad for him. I'm sure he's probably, you know, kicking himself about it. So don't want to dwell on it too much, but that was definitely one of the storylines that you got to take out of this one, for sure. Going back to Joseph Fambule, he also wins in the 200. It was really going to be not even a debate for him. Once we saw that he won the 100 meter dash, it was almost like locked that he was going to end up winning in the two. So he wins in the 200 with a time of 19.83. Once again, he had a pretty good comeback that he normally does. His top end speed is just far superior than anyone else in the competition there. It was interesting because I was also at the New York City Grand Prix on Sunday and interviewed Noah Lyles, and he was talking about, yeah, once I saw that he won the 100, it really wasn't even a debate that he was going to win the two. I mean, he's just so fast. You know, he's got that confidence. He's got that ability to execute at a very high level that I just don't see him not winning it. And so that was something that was really interesting that we heard from, you know, one of the pros who was supposed to be committing to Florida. Also, after his race, we see him, you know, this is Joseph Fambule. He picks up the phone and like pretends to call it. This was just like Grant Holloway, who did that back in 2019 after he won the national championship in the 110 meter hurdles. And then we saw on Sunday, Noah Lyles did the same thing. So it looks like this might be a little trend that we could see going on with the sprinters. And I'm not mad at it one bit. So next, one of our final stories when it comes to the NCAA championship that I do want to talk about, and that's going to be just the closeness of the Bowerman for the women. So we came out with our Bowerman predictions on Tuesday now. It was Monday. Sorry. We came out with it on Monday. Today's Tuesday. And so with it, the men's side, it was a little bit easier for me for what I decided to pick. For those of you that didn't see it, we had Aiden Owens in first, Trey Cunningham in second. Who was it? Joseph Fambule third, Randolph Ross fourth, and then in our fifth position was Kyle Garland. So those were our top five for the men. I was feeling pretty good about those picks. But on the women's side, oh man, the women's side is impossible to pick for the Bowerman. Like, it really is. There are so many good ladies on this side that really the top four should all be number one. And here, let me tell you why. So Abby Steiner, she has the national record in the 200 indoors, national champion in the 200 as well. National champion in the 200 outdoors, as well as national record holder in the 200 outdoors as well. She comes in third in the 100 at the national championship with an 11.08, and then she splits a 48 in the 4x4 for Kentucky. So that's her. She had an amazing season. Anna Hall, so she wins the pentathlon indoors and then the heptathlon outdoors. She had the fourth best pentathlon indoors, and then she had the second best heptathlon outdoors. She also would have the best one if you adjust for new implements as well as wins. So if you take those into effect, she has the national record outdoors. On top of that, at the national championship, not only did she win a national championship in the heptathlon, she also did that 400 meter hurdles right before her race, just 20 minutes before her race, and she got second place behind Britton Wilson. This is a brand new event for her, and she ended up running a 54.76, so just the ultimate team player there. Jasmine Moore, so she went 8 for 8, the only lady in this position that won 8 out of 8 titles. So she won the long jump and the triple jump at the SECs and SECs indoors, NCAA championship indoors, SEC's outdoors and the national championship outdoors. She has just been on an absolute tear. On top of that, she also has the national record indoors, where she has the top three jumps in the triple jump she did all this season. And then she's also fourth in the triple jump outdoors when it comes to the record books. So she has just been truly, truly unbeatable. When it comes to the throws, we have another lady who should be in there, which is Cameron Rogers. She is the national record holder in the hammer throw with a throw of 77.67 meters. She won the national championship, obviously. She threw the national record at the national championship. And she has all top 10 times in the national champion, or in NCAA in college. She has the top 10 best throws. And she did five of those throws this year, including the national record. And then I think it was, fourth and seventh and eighth, something like that. Maybe a few more, obviously, because she did five. But she has been proving to be the best, one of the best throwers we have ever seen. And so with those four ladies, I'm just having such a difficult idea of who actually is the best, because they all have reasons that they should win this. Like, if any of these four women win it, I'll be like, yep, that makes perfect sense. I can completely see a way that any of those four women can make it. Obviously, also Anna Hall is the American champion in the heptathlon, where she won that against professionals. So she's been like, there's just so many things and so many reasons why each of these ladies should win the Bowerman Award, but it's like, I can't pick. And so I made my predictions. I said it was Jasmine Moore currently in first, Abby currently in second, Anna Hall in third. In fourth, I had Cameron Rogers. And then in fifth, I had Julian Alfred, who is your national record holder in the 60. I believe second fastest in the 100 outdoors. And she went undefeated in the 100 meters outdoors as well. So it's just been super difficult to pick who it is that's going to be winning that. But They're all deserving of it. It's just hard to make these picks, but hey, somebody's got to do it. So that was the NCAA championship. It was amazing. Like I said, NCAA championships is the best track meet. There are many other performances, obviously, that we saw, but you know, we can't go over every single one of them. Some standouts we saw: Trey Cunningham running a 13.00. Just behind him was Eric Edwards, who gave him a challenge and gave him a push. Randolph Ross winning with the 44.13 or 44.16 and saying that it was a bad race, even though it was his second fastest race of all time. Which was really interesting. And so Talitha Diggs coming in ranked 8th in the NCAA. Many people having her counted out and ending up doubling and returning as the outdoor national champion in the 400, setting a new PR with 49.99 there as well. So NCAA's was amazing. I'm super sad that it's gone, but I'm looking forward to seeing what it's going to be indoors and outdoors. And keep an eye out. We will be doing some way too early predictions for that pretty soon as well. Next, let's just talk about the pros for a little bit. So we don't have too much time with what we're going to be talking about right now, but let's go on over to the NYC Grand Prix. So we have two performances or two athletes that we really want to discuss right now. And so first one has to be Devin Allen. So Devin Allen ends up running the third fastest time ever in the 110 meter hurdles with a time of 12.84. He ends up beating Grant Holloway, who is opening up his season, and ended up running a 13.06. And Devin was looking really good in this race. He was looking really smooth. He's over the hurdles really quickly. He always finishes out well. And so the fact that Grant Holloway hadn't separated himself yet by the second half of the race, it was once again similar to the men's 100 when we saw that at the national championship, where it's like Mekhi Williams, he starts very well. It doesn't look like he has separation yet. We know that there's an athlete that has really good top end speed. This is going to be a close one. And so that's what it was with Devin Allen. He ends up pulling away, gets 12.84, third fastest time ever. And after the race, he was like, I'm going for the world record.
Break the world record today.
I've been feeling it for about like 6 weeks. Just some heavy legs, because I was, you know, in Philly back and forth doing OTAs and trying to, you know, 4 days of football, Monday through Thursday, and then my off days were on the track Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I didn't really have any rest. I got COVID 14 days ago. And so I took like 10 days off to recover from that, you know, and so I have fresh legs. That's pretty much all that matters. My coach was like, hey, I think you're gonna be fine, just relax.
So tired and COVID equals your shit?
Well, no, I think, you know, I think the COVID obviously is not good because your body is like trying to recover, but it was good for me to get off my feet for, you know, 7 to 10 days.
And so now it's like, does he have that legitimate chance of breaking the world record? Like, I think you have to put him in that conversation. He's only 0.4 off of being able to do it. Like a 1079, he could definitely do it. I mean, he's been mentioning since last year that his goal is to be a world champion and to break the world record. And so far, he has now put himself into that upper echelon where he is no longer, you know, a fringe 13 guy, you know, maybe a 1299. Like, he has been showing this entire year, no, like, I am a threat to win this year. Like, this isn't just, you know, something that I'm trying to, you know, finish out. Like, no, he is focusing in on track and field, and he wants, like, yo, let's go out with a bang. He did mention he is planning on continuing to run track and field, so it's not like he is retiring from the sport here. He mentioned that he, you know, will be continuing, so we'll probably see him in summer meets after this, you know, trying to make USA teams and stuff like that. It's just the focus will be slightly different because his training throughout the beginning of the year will be obviously for football there. So that was for Devin. It was awesome seeing him do that, and excited to see how this will continue for him as he goes forward with that. And then the last story that I want to discuss, also coming from the NYC Grand Prix, is going to be Sha'Carri Richardson. So Sha'Carri Richardson ends up coming in second in the 100 meter dash at NYC Grand Prix. She runs a time of 10.85, right behind Aaliyah Hobbs, who ran a 10.83. First time Aaliyah Hobbs has been sub 1090 since 2017. So she was feeling really good about that, finally being able to break that barrier again since she was back in college. And then also in the 200 meter dash, Sha'Carri Richardson won that as well with a time of 22.36. Like I mentioned, I was at the meet, so we were able to get some interviews with her.
Hey, you did great out
there. I feel phenomenal. This only been like my third 100 of the season.
Yep.
I feel fantastic. And my best, one of the people I idolize the most at first, Aaliyah Hobbs. I love her. If anybody wants to beat me, I would definitely want it to be Aaliyah.
Off the track, there are two things that were really the main storylines for me when it came to Sha'Carri Richardson. So one, the fashion. So she had like a fishnet bodysuit underneath it, like on her arms and on her legs. And it looked really cool. Like, I think that she is bringing this new fashion era to track and field that we had lost since FloJo. Like, we hadn't seen that type of fashion, that type of style since FloJo was doing it a while back now. And it looks really cool. It's really nice. She's unique in her style. She had mentioned, like, no, I'm gonna do me. This is what I wanna do. And it's interesting how all of these people complain about, oh my God, like, all these uniforms are so similar. I am one of those people, you know, saying, oh my God, the uniform's so similar, but I don't like what she's doing. It's too unique. No. If you're gonna be in the uniforms are too similar party, you cannot also be in the I am going to be criticizing Sha'Carri party for the uniform she's wearing. So pick a side. It's either the uniforms are fine or they need to change and I like what she's doing with it. Let's not get in the middle of this type of thing. Also, it was super cool to see just the draw that her name has. Like, when I was in the mix zone right after she finishes a race, every single kid that was at that track meet was hounding her.
Has to be.
It was like, wow, this is like a real time celebrity. Like, there were obviously people that, you know, other people that had draws and, you know, kids that wanted to get autographs as well. You know, Christian Coleman, a few kids, you know, kids were getting autographs. Sydney McLaughlin, kids wanted to see. Noah Lyles, kids wanted to see. It was actually really cool. Noah Lyles, like, these kids were asking for his spike. And so he was like, what's my PR time? Whoever can guess my PR in the 200, I'll give you my spikes. And like, the kids were like 20 point. And I was like, man, ain't nobody getting these spikes if you're going to start a PR for Noah Lyles with a 20 point. But yeah, he threw out his spikes to the crowd, making them run for it. And, you know, Gabby Thomas signing some pictures, Sydney McLaughlin, but no one had the draw that Sha'Carri Richardson had. Like, there, the kids were lining up before she even got there. Like, everyone wanted to, you know, see her, get these pictures. And so it just shows, like, no matter how much people want to hate on her, and no matter how much people want to say we don't need Sha'Carri Richardson in track, and, you know, the track is going to be fine without her and all of that, that's not the case. Like, the people that are saying that Sha'Carri Richardson, you know, is doing too much and we don't need it, clearly have never seen her at a track meet. Because the draw that she has, the celebrity she has, the aura that she gives off is bar none. And not only does she have this amazing aura about her and her personality, she's so kind and nice to these kids. Like, she was spending an immense amount of time helping, you know, signing autographs and pictures. Like, you know, there were pens that were out of ink and was like, hey, who's got another pen? Like, I need to get another pen to sign these autographs. Like, taking all this time, like, she could have easily been like, okay, I'm gonna sign a few things. Like, all right, I'm gone, I'll see you later. Like, no, she was taking her time to do this. And it was nice to see that, you know, she's doing these things when, you know, you have hundreds of kids that are standing there for you, not for anyone else. They're there for you. And so that was something that was really awesome to see. But yeah, that's going to do it for us here with Track World News. It's going to be this episode. If you enjoyed it, leave a like, comment, subscribe. Helps us know that you're enjoying the content. We are so, so close to 1,000 subscribers. We would really appreciate it if you could hit that subscribe button. We're less than 200 away. So let's help us get to that milestone. But that's going to do it from us here. Have a good one. Talk to you soon. Peace.